The 7.7.
It's time for Bleed Tech Blue Radio, sponsored by Trenton Interiors. This is your source for Louisiana Tech sports news. For the next 90 minutes, Bleed Tech Blue Radio goes deep inside Tech football, basketball, and recruiting. Tonight's show on ESPN 97.7 is also brought to you by your 26 area local State Farm agents, Brister's Smokehouse, National Jewelry, Pierce Service Company, Brennan Dodge, Dairy Queen, and Gary Stokely, Keller Williams Realty, as well as hotline sponsor Fairway Cards. Now here's your host for Bleed Tech Blue Radio, Jonathan Ford.
Welcome into Bleed Tech Blue Radio, a special 2016, the first episode of 2016 here of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Jason Jones joining me. Lane Davison going to join us here in a little while. We'll call him the kid.
The kid.
We're going to sit in here for the show today. Of course, Tech, a lot going on around Tech. They did come out with the New Orleans Bowl victory over Arkansas State. Dare I say, putting the Sun Belt in their place some more?
A little bit. You know, you saw a little bit of chatter leading up, especially the few days going into the game. And, you know, I thought Tech fans were pretty well reserved. I don't know if they just didn't know what to think about Arkansas State or they were just confident. But
I think it was more that they were cautious about the game. They didn't want to say too much and then get beat.
Yeah, so maybe they were respecting Arkansas State, but the team came out, took care of business, and all those Arkansas State fans that were pretty vocal on Twitter especially, you know, they kind of shut up.
The second half was impressive from Louisiana Tech. At halftime, Tech's leading, or it's a tie game, 17-all. Tech comes out in the third quarter, outscores Arkansas State 17-3. Fourth quarter, Tech with 13, Arkansas State with an 8 spot for a final score of 47-28. Man, I was on to something when I was talking to Luke about those penalties. But did I expect Louisiana Tech to have more penalty yardage than the Red Wolves? I did not.
Some of that goes on the refs. I mean, they were just looking for any reason to blow that whistle and throw a flag. But
there was a lot of legitimate stuff out there.
But then on the other hand, you know, both teams were kind of getting caught up in the whole just going back and forth and being a little extra physical, pushing a little bit late, that kind of thing. And so maybe the guys in the stripes were just trying to keep control of it, but it seemed like every time you turned around, there was another flag, another personal foul. Yeah, I mean, who would have thought Tech would have got more yards than Arkansas State did? It's crazy.
Also been a little bit of a staff change at Louisiana Tech in football. We're not done talking about the New Orleans Bowl. Just a tease of that. Tony Peterson headed to East Carolina, the offensive coordinator. Of course, Skip Holtz has been calling the plays, but Tony Peterson, the offensive coordinator, headed to East Carolina. We'll talk more about that in the next segment. There's plenty to talk about. Who will replace him and all that good stuff. In that New Orleans Bowl, Jeff Driscoll, in his final game as a Bulldog, 26 of 38, 458 yards, 3 touchdowns. Boston Scott led Tech in rushing, 4 carries for 106 yards. Better watch out, Jared Kraft.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's so many positions to fill for next year, and we can definitely get into that during the show, but I feel like running back is probably the most wide-open position. I mean, Jared Kraft's got the most experience. He's going to be a junior. He's backed up Kenneth Dixon for the last 2 years, but Boston Scott has been impressive in practice the last 2 years, and he's finally getting a chance to get on the field a little bit, and when he gets his chance, he's going with it. So he's proven that he's explosive. Jaquise Dancy was a true freshman this past year, got a little experience, got on the field some. Once he goes through spring football, he'll have it.
The spring's going to be huge for Dancy.
Yeah, for all three of them. But Dancy has a chance to close the gap and make a case for him to be the starter. So, and especially, you know, we'll see who the offensive coordinator is. That's my biggest question mark for next season is how will the offense look? You know, Coach Holtz came in and brought in a couple fullbacks and tight ends, and we kind of went with the multiple offense where they could spread it out or they could load up and go big. But will they Will they try to go more of a spread offense now that you don't have Kenneth Dixon, but you've got some veteran linemen, you got some veteran receivers like Trent Taylor that you can count on? Will they go with more of a spread because you don't have Dixon back there to just bail you out? So, and Kraft can catch the ball in the backfield, so he would be perfect for a kind of a spread system. So we'll see if the offense changes a little bit.
I don't expect it to. We'll get more into that, but and we'll keep going to this through the box score. It's not like Kenneth Dixon was chopped liver rushing the football. Finished with 21 carries, 102 yards, 4.9 yards a carry, two touchdowns, two receiving, four total touchdowns for Kenneth Dixon. One that was an absolute beauty in the end zone with the toe touch, first touchdown of the game. That's his biggest strength heading into the NFL, is his ability to catch the football out of the backfield. Somebody made this comparison for me of what Kenneth Dixon reminds them of in the NFL. Pierre Thomas.
Makes pretty good sense.
He's not great at anything, but he's good at everything.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. He's in college, he was very great at breaking tackles. But he's also had good speed. His seam gets faster every year.
He has gotten faster.
He's increased his speed, and he's shifted. He can make you miss. So he does a lot of things well. But I would say breaking tackles, he was at an elite level in college. We'll see how that translates to the NFL when you've got 270-pound linebackers that can run just as fast as you can.
And then you look at receiving for Louisiana Tech. Trent Taylor, once again, 10 receptions, 149 yards, the junior. One touchdown, a long of 45. No one in the country can stop him. And those are big words.
Yeah, huge.
At 5, let's be honest, 5'8", 180. Is the 180 being generous?
No, that's probably about right.
5'8", 180, and he's going to get his, as the kid and the kids say. Paul Turner in his final game as a Bulldog, 5 catches, 97 yards, a long of 71. That one there at the end of the first half that
almost went for a score.
Do you think that is the play that gave Tech the momentum going into halftime?
No, I don't think so.
Had they scored, it would have.
Yeah, it would have. But I just felt like Tech had the momentum most of the game, and then for some reason – at the end of the second quarter, they let Arkansas State score a couple of times and make it a ball game again. But Tech had built a 14-point lead, and it looked like they were going to roll with it. And so maybe chance to get a lead again. But I'd say coming back in the second half, once Tech got some more points on the board, you could kind of tell it was over. Arkansas State wasn't going to have another comeback in them.
And then a couple of more returners for Louisiana Tech. Carlos Henderson, who gets hurt on his lone catch of 53 yards. Skip Holt said he dislocated 3 toes in that on that play. That sounds absolutely miserable. Connor Smith, 3 catches for 40 yards, 2 in a row that were, one was an acrobatic catch. That's what we would have seen from Connor Smith most of the year, but he was hurt for half the season.
Or more, and hadn't seen him in a while, it seemed like. And
those high ankle sprains are brutal.
So he showed what he can do, and so now, I mean, what kind of depth are they going to have inside a receiver, next year? You've got Trent Taylor, obviously, your number one receiver coming back in the middle there, but then,
Connor Smith's back.
Connor Smith's back, but then Cam's back, who was playing that same position, Cam McKnight. So you've got two guys competing, and then you got Alfred Smith coming in, the transfer, who's
unbelievable.
Going to be huge for him. So you've got, does he back up Trent Taylor? Do you put him on the field at the same time?
Marcus Gaines is back.
Marcus Gaines on the outside, and so along with Henderson. So
and then this spring, you get Rashid Bonnet gets a spring, and he's a burner. You look at Woodard, Javonte Woodard from Houghton gets a spring under his belt. A lot of these true freshmen that sat out this year need spring camp, something fierce.
Yeah, and I don't know how much reps they got during the bowl practice. They weren't able to use all their allotted bowl practices because of the early kickoff, the early date of December 19th. But spring football, you're going to have so many players that were either backups this past year, didn't get a lot of reps, or guys that were true freshmen or that had to redshirt. And so a lot of new faces on the field for spring.
Jonathan Barnes is back. Gerald Schaus is back. offensive line as a whole will be largely back. I mean, Kirby Wixon's back for his redshirt senior season. I'm sure they've got to apply for that redshirt year. Everyone expects him to get it. David Mahaffey's back. O'Shea Dugas is back. Darryl Brown is back.
Brunson's back.
Brunson's back.
The two main ones you lose are Jens Danielson and then Josh Robinson. But, you know, I would say seven out of your top nine guys are back.
Dare I say the two of them struggled more than anybody else in that offensive line, outside of O'Shea Dugas, who had his freshman mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, O'Shea had a lot of penalties early in the year, but those two guys were guys that were on again, off again, the last couple of years, getting to play very much. And, you know, they were good, but they weren't great. Another year of experience for Dugas, and McCready's coming up. You know, we'll see. I mean, the offensive line could very well improve, especially with all the competition.
And Lovett coming out of Strong, who very well may be the left tackle of the future. He looks like a left tackle. I mean, Darryl Brown was 260 when he got to Louisiana Tech. I would say that Lovett was 270.
But, yeah, he looks a lot bigger than that now. So, the offensive line is going to be a strength of the team. And so if you've got a new quarterback coming in, which Tech is going to have a young quarterback probably – or at least a new quarterback, having that veteran offensive line and having those veteran receivers. You know, we didn't even mention Marlon Watts at receiver. Yeah. That's another one with a lot of experience. So you've got receivers to throw to, offensive line to block for you. The only safety valve you don't have is that Kenneth Dixon back there behind you. But still, you've got Jared Kraft, who can catch the ball in the backfield.
And you got Ladarius Thomas coming in.
So
the bruiser.
It'll be a perfect chance for a young quarterback to come in and kind of – learn the ropes and have that veteran offensive line and have that Trent Taylor to throw to kind of ease him into it.
We'll also talk in this show. We'll have Eric Conkle joining us at 6:45. Ed Miller talking a little Old Dominion out of Newport News at 6:30. We'll talk offensive coordinator in the next segment. A little recruiting in this one. Since we are in the nitty-gritty of recruiting, although it's a dead period, which the dead period is whenever every staff in the country is nervous about what in the world their class will look like whenever the dead period's over. That will end after the national championship game. They got to put everybody on a level playing field so that when some teams are still playing, they got to make sure that others aren't out recruiting. So once the national championship's over, recruiting will really, really heat up. Heard a couple of leaked names of some visitors, a quarterback in that among them. We'll talk about that. Plenty to talk about here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio in this first episode in 2016. Hope everybody had a happy new year. We'll be back right after this. Are you ready? Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher at BleedTechBlue.com and host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Jason Jones joining me here. Lane Davison as well, and John Tabor, as always, producing the show. First segment, forgot to mention a couple of sponsors, so let me catch up. First segment brought to you by your 26 local State Farm agents. And our title sponsor, of course, is Trenton Interiors in downtown Ruston, a historic Rogers Furniture Building. Go check out those guys for all your interior decorating needs. Give us a call on the Fairway Carts of Minden hotline, 888-993-7762, or send us a text on the same number, the Fairway Carts of Minden text line, 888-993-7762. Who would you like to see as the offensive coordinator at Louisiana Tech? Something tells me the overwhelming response will be Tim Rattay.
Probably so.
The beloved son. Not that he shouldn't be, but that's what he is. There's a couple of options out there. Will it be Joe Sloan, who was named assistant head coach by Skip Holtz this past summer as a 29-year-old, 28-year-old, something like that? I'm not saying that it was done by the cover of darkness, but there was no press release. But it just was something you had to notice on the roster this year, that Joe Sloan, assistant head coach, he's been with Skip Holtz since he was a walk-on quarterback at East Carolina, was a grad assistant for Holtz at South Florida, got his first full-time gig here at Louisiana Tech. Skip Holtz thinks very highly of Joe Sloan, and those two could likely finish one another's sentences.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter how young he is. He's been a full-time assistant here for 3 years now, and he's Skip's right-hand man, so he might as well be the assistant head coach. He's earned it. But, yeah, as far as the offensive coordinator, I just wonder if that title is going to be something to be used to attract another candidate to come in to be the last offensive assistant. We're presuming wide receivers coach now that Rattay's moved to quarterback.
But you could also move Joe Sloan over to wide receivers.
Yeah, and so then the new guy could be tight ends and special teams or whatever, you know, or just tight ends. And so it kind of gives you some options. Coach Holtz has plenty of ways he can point. Do you bring in somebody that's co-offensive coordinator with somebody like Sam Rattay, and you can use that title to give them both a raise and pay them more? And obviously the first thing, you know, that's going to come up when you're looking to hire somebody is, well, how much does it pay? And so that if you have a co-offensive coordinator title or even the full offensive coordinator title, and like you've mentioned to me talking in private, you know, this might be another one of those, you know, Manny Diaz one-year kind of offers where a guy comes in, he's out of work, and maybe he's been at a bigger school. He comes in for 1 year. Maybe he's the co-offensive coordinator, or maybe he's the offensive coordinator for 1 year, kind of gets his name back out there, and then he's gone again.
The guy from Texas A&M that was fired yesterday.
Yeah, Jake Spavital.
Jake Spavital, and then
he's like a 30-year-old offensive coordinator, quarterbacks coach.
Sean Isabella texted me right before the game, and he goes, "How about this for adding to the land of misfit toys?" The line that Skip Holtz likes to use so often, Steve Sarkisian.
Yeah. Maybe not. Maybe I wouldn't go that far, but you know, there's plenty of.
But how about that? That would be funny.
Yeah, I mean. And who knows? I mean, nobody in the world thought, you know, who
and Manny Diaz would, now back home in Miami. I think that's good for him and his family. I'm happy for them.
So, I mean, you've got, like, what about Tony Levine? You know, he was tight ends and special teams coach here at Louisiana Tech back in, I think, the 90s or early 2000s, I think under Gary Croton in the late 90s. And so
now you're starting to tug on people's heartstrings.
But Levine was the head coach at Houston, had a winning record, got fired anyway, and so he's been out of football for a year.
But the guy who replaced him has the sweetest gig in college football in Tom Herman.
Oh, yeah.
What is that guy making now, $1.5 million a year?
Yeah, and he's taking Houston to the next level. But Levine was doing a good job there. They just wanted more. And obviously it paid off for him. But Levine has come out and said in the last few weeks that he wants to be a head coach again. But you got to think, if the head coaching jobs didn't come open, now there's two in Texas right now, Texas State and Texas San Antonio, but I have not heard his name mentioned once. If he didn't get a head coaching job, maybe he would come be an offensive coordinator or a co-offensive coordinator or something just for 1 year.
A little Conference USA football news.
Yeah.
Larry Coker giving his pink slip today.
Yeah, I wonder if they were just trying to copy Texas State. You know, Texas, they both had their older, you know, former big.
Man, they hate one another.
Yeah, I mean, one of them had Francione, one of them had Coker, and so they both kind of were doing the same thing, starting, you know, the Division I football process with a big-name coach. Francione's out, what, 2 weeks ago, right around Christmas, and now, bang, here comes San Antonio saying Coker's out.
Somebody, I think it was Casey Bowman, who's joined us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio from GoMetal.com, mentioned it on Facebook that I called it a dumpster fire going on in San Antonio, and he said the dumpster fire is that the AD gave him the death wish of giving words of he's going to be here at least through 2018, I think is what it was. And then after the new year, here's his pink slip. UTSA strapped for cash, and I don't really understand that move, but that's for San Antonio Talk Radio to talk about, I guess. But going back to the offensive coordinator deal, I could see Joe Sloan, I could see Tim Rattay, or I could see an outsider. If I were a betting man, I'd put my money on one of the two that are already here. When you look at what happened when Manny Diaz left, the promotion of Blake Baker, who was a disciple of Manny Diaz, I think that's the that is what Skip Holtz likes to do. He wants continuity. He doesn't want a change in verbiage.
But at the same time, he's done it three different ways. He's brought in young guys and kind of moved them up through the system. We saw that with Carl Scott getting hired last year. But then another way he'll do it is he'll bring in a coach he's worked with in the past, like the offensive line coach that he brought in this past year.
Robert McFarland.
And then – but he'll also bring in, like we talked about, one of these coaches from a bigger school who's just trying to be on the rebound. And it's kind of like a redemption story. So he could go – he knows so many – people all over the country.
I could see more to the empty spot going to somebody like the in out of the mold of a Carl Scott, because Joe Sloan's young, but he's really a veteran at this point in coaching because he's been around Holtz so long. He knows what Holtz wants. He knows the offense probably as well as anybody else does. So I really expect maybe somebody out of that mold to fill that last spot. Now, Skip Holtz did promote Tim Rattay to quarterbacks coach, which was one of the roles that Tony Peterson had. The curious part was is if he's going to name Tim Rattay his offensive coordinator, why didn't he do it when he named him his quarterbacks coach?
And also, you've got $200,000 worth of salary coming off the books, so there's money to use. Now, maybe Rattay will get a bump, moving positions, especially if he gets a title change. But he's got a pretty good little salary there to attract, a more veteran coach. So we'll see. If the right guy comes along, he can afford to pay him.
And I think a lot of the coaches got raises this past offseason. Not this offseason, because we're already in the offseason, but before this past season. So I would imagine there's some more coming. Those guys deserve it. Skip Holtz deserves it. I wrote a piece here in the last week on BleedTechBlue.com about it's time for Tech to put its assistants under contract. Right now, Tech assistants, including the coordinators, are on no contract. Not even a June to June or a February to February contract. They are, I guess, the goodwill of Louisiana Tech to pay their salaries every week. No contract whatsoever. That is not the norm across college football. It is time for that to change. A June to June contract's common. February to February contracts are also common. Because a June to June gives you your coaches through the academic year. The February to February obviously takes them through the signing period. I could understand seeing either way. I talked initially before I altered the story a little bit, updated it after talking to some people about putting buyouts on every assistant. That is not the norm either. The norm is to put buyouts on the coordinators, which is your offensive coordinator, your defensive coordinator, and your recruiting coordinator. So for Louisiana Tech, that would be an offensive coordinator to be named, a defensive coordinator in Blake Baker, recruiting coordinator, who that position isn't named, but it's basically Joe Sloan. So you put one on all three of those guys. I would even venture to say you put one on Jabbar Jalouk. Because if Skip Holtz leaves,
well, and
somebody's going to want to keep Jabbar Jalouk on the staff.
Well, as long as they keep recruiting the way they're recruiting, Jalouk and Sloan, they're going to get offers. But
Jalouk is a guy that's coming from being a public school teacher in the city of New Orleans, so he's in the state retirement system already. Until he's completely vested, has as many years in the system as he can, I don't imagine he's looking to get out of the state.
Yeah, but you never know if the right job came with enough money
to make all that matter.
I'm not saying it's going to happen anytime soon, but to prove your point, I mean, Manny Diaz just had a $265,000 buyout with Mississippi State. Miami paid it like that. It didn't matter.
So you think about it. You put 125 on Manny Diaz. He's signing that contract.
Yeah, I mean,
where was he going to go?
Even if you put $50,000 on there, it's just money you didn't have. So it's just protecting yourself a little bit. But
and really, even you could have done it to Matt Morbitz. He was your associate head coach, and that would make sense to put it on your associate head coach. So you put $50,000 on him. You put it on Tony Peterson. Put $50,000.
Yeah, why not?
There's six figures you did not have, and you are already strapped for cash as it is.
Well, one thing on the assistants, I mean, it's probably going to be somebody that we hadn't thought of, because that's how Skip Holtz seems to operate. He will pull a name out that we have not even thought was possible. He's so well connected. He's made some fantastic hires in the last couple of years, and so it'll be a good one. Another guy that was let go recently at Texas Tech, Trey Haverty, he was actually – had signed with Sonny Dykes to be a graduate assistant here like 6 years ago, and then he was here for like a month, and then he got a full-time assistant job and he was gone again. But he's back on the market. He was coaching defense for Texas Tech, and they fired most of their defensive staff, including Kevin Curtis, who was here. But he played receiver at Texas Tech, and he's coached receivers before at TCU, so he's a guy that could come in and coach receivers. He's out there looking for a job.
The names are innumerable, honestly. I mean, it could be almost anybody, and no rumors have started circulating, because Skip Holtz is going to wait until the coaches' conference, which is the week of the national championship.
One Carl Scott-like hire that I would keep an eye on is the receivers coach at Northwestern State. He was actually the receivers coach at Tennessee under Dooley in 2012, and he's right down the road in Natchitoches. He's a younger guy, so that's a guy to keep an eye out on.
If you're coachingsearch.com, footballscoop.com, eat your heart out. We got Jason Jones.
Hey, we're going to find them eventually.
There is not a stone that you do not unturn, that you don't uncover to figure out some names.
No doubt. So, do we have Ed Miller coming on next?
Ed Miller next.
He wrote a good article this week. I want to ask him about talking about some of these names of schools that you've seen show up on these Conference USA basketball schedules. I mean, the Conference USA teams, the power rating for the conference has gone down the last two or three years, and it's down again this year, and the strength of schedule is just horrendous, and I want to get his take on that. He wrote a really good piece this week.
I'm sure part of it's going to be that it's tough to schedule as a mid-major. When you're a Louisiana Tech going to Oklahoma, beating them a couple of years ago, who took the number one team, or they're the number two team in the country right now, took Kansas to three overtimes in Fog Allen.
Yeah, and Old Dominion has played an extremely tough schedule, so they're not one of the culprits, and I'm sure he was not talking about them, but some of these other schools, maybe he was taking a shot at some of the other schools in that region, but golly, there's some – he mentioned his piece. We'll ask him about it.
Let's take this break. This segment brought to you by Brister's Smokehouse. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio, brought to you by Trenton Interiors in downtown Ruston. I am Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com and host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Jason Jones, analyst on BleedTechBlue.com. And Lane Davison joining us here.
Yo, yo.
Little shout out there from Lane. Getting the word in edgewise.
The kid.
That's exactly right. Go visit Trenton Interiors in downtown Ruston, 111 North Trenton Street, for all your interior decorating needs. Let's go to the Fairway Carts of Minden hotline with Ed Miller. Ed, what's going on, my friend?
Not too much. How you doing, Jay?
Doing wonderful. Well, we got a little bit of a basketball game going on in Ruston Thursday. Give us your overall thoughts of it before we get into some specifics.
Yeah, it's a big game in Conference USA, and, you know, kind of a clash of styles. Obviously, ODU is really deliberate. They play at a very slow pace, and I know Louisiana Tech, even with the coaching change from what I understand, you know, is still an up-tempo team that wants to force turnovers and, you know, create a little chaos out there. So, and obviously the winning streak and all that stuff, and ODU hasn't played too well on the road lately, so should be interesting to see how it goes.
Is Trey Freeman the one that's making that thing go still?
Yeah, Trey is still the guy. He is, you know, seeing a lot more attention now. Last year was his first time through the league because he was a transfer, and he's getting a lot more defensive attention. Aaron Bakehode has been playing well of late. He's been coming off the bench, which is a different role for him. But they wanted a scoring spark off the bench. And Bakehode, to his credit, has filled that role pretty well. You know, he didn't hang his head or anything. And he's coming off, you know, two or three real good games.
What's the physical presence inside for the Monarchs right now?
They're better now that Brandon Stiff is back. He was a transfer from East Carolina who sat out last year. He's a son of assistant coach Bryant Stiff, who was a 10-year NBA player and is still the all-time leading scorer at Virginia. And he was had a sprained knee, and he missed, he's missed about six games. And since he's been back, it's been much better. They're not a big team. Pretty athletic, but they're not huge. I mean, they had a 7-foot reserve who actually was just dismissed from the team. They were hoping he could help them, but it just didn't work out. And so they go about 6'8", you know, 6'7", 6'7", across the front line.
Yeah, I remember Stith playing for the Nuggets. Have they missed Richard Ross? You know, he wasn't tall, but he was a banger inside last year, and I think the team's leading rebounder. I noticed Denzel Taylor's back, and I guess is Stith kind of filling that role for what Ross played last year?
Yeah, Stith is – Jeff Jones, the coach, told me before the season that Stith was the best rebounder he'd ever coached. And, you know, he coached 13 years at Virginia in the ACC, so that's saying something. And Stith has a real knack for going after the ball. He's athletic. He's not quite the highlight reel that Richard Ross was, but he's got good bounce and doesn't have a lot of touch right now around the basket. But he, you know, his upside is big. Ross, I think, is missed for his energy. Ross was just a classic energy guy. I mean, he'd come in and dunk over about three people and get the crowd into it. And, you know, Richard wasn't always in the right place offensively or defensively, but he made up for it with a lot of spectacular plays.
Well, and you mentioned Freeman's the guy that makes the team go, but I heard you say Aaron Bakehode's name earlier. I mean, the guy's shooting 34% from three. He and Freeman are both averaging over 15 points a game, which, I mean, they were the two leading scorers last year. What does Bakehode bring to the table besides just his three-point shooting?
He's very crafty. He's kind of a player that plays with a lot of pace, stop and go, kind of herky-jerky. He's not a spectacular athlete by any means, but he's very savvy. He's just one of those kind of crafty players. And he is a senior now, and so he's been through a lot. And he's willing to do whatever, you know, it takes to have the team win. He was one of the, I think he's the last guy left over from their 5-25 team 3 years ago. So he's, you know, he's literally seen a lot of ups and downs. And he brings him that presence and, you know, just a lot of savvy. Pretty good passer. And he's been very efficient. He's probably having his best year.
Well, Ed, you had a piece two or three days ago talking about the start to Conference USA's year, and I thought it was a really good piece, and it was real interesting to me. Outside of probably Old Dominion, UAB, Louisiana Tech, maybe Middle Tennessee, not a lot of success in the conference this season. You talked about some of the smaller schools that the Conference USA teams are playing, and you know, I've never heard of some of these, like Trevecca or Brescia or Jarvis Christian. And I get the point. If they're an NAIA school, they don't count against your RPI. But is that the reason you're seeing so many of those games on the schedule?
I guess, although I think, to be fair, I would imagine that some of these schools have hard times getting games, you know, at home. You know, Old Dominion has a luxury. They pay guarantees. So they've got – they played four teams from the MEAC, the Mid-Eastern Athletic Conference, which is a conference here on the East Coast in the Mid-Atlantic. And, you know, they'll pay $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 for those teams to come in. And they've got the budget to do that. I would imagine some of the smaller schools in the league probably don't have that, and it may be difficult to get teams to come play at their place.
Well,
you know,
I'm assuming that's...
I guess those teams are getting a little money, too, the NAIA, but probably not, you know.
Probably $10,000 or $15,000. I mean, we're not...
Right.
We're not talking a whole lot.
But right. you're probably talking about like Delaware State or Maryland Eastern
exactly.
Shore.
Exactly. Well, yeah, exactly.
And you're right. I mean, I would say Old Dominion's probably got the toughest schedule that I've seen so far in the conference, and maybe the most competitive schedule. This was the first year Louisiana Tech's paid guarantees. We've seen, I believe, two schools, maybe Jackson State and North Carolina Central coming over for guarantees. And in the past, if Louisiana Tech was going to get home games, they were going to have to play teams, even from the SWAC, like Jackson State or Southern or Arkansas Pine Bluff. They were having to play home and away. And so now Louisiana Tech's stepping up and getting a couple of guarantee games. So I think that is making it for a better schedule.
Yeah, and you know, Old Dominion pays those, and you know, some of their fans were joking that they were going to be the number one seed in the MEAC tournament, but because they're 4-0. A lot of their games this year were on the road. They have home-and-home series with a lot of schools that used to be in the Colonial, like VCU, William & Mary, Richmond, Georgia State, and all those home-and-homes happened to be on the road this year, so they had to go to all those places, and Stith was hurt during part of that stretch. And then they played Purdue and St. Joe's up in Connecticut in a tournament, and Purdue just was is huge. They just overwhelmed them. And St. Joe's, they lost to on a last-second shot. So they've been competitive on the road. They just haven't been able to get over the hump. And I know with this trip coming up, they're looking to at least, you know, get a split, because obviously after going to Ruston, they go over to Hattiesburg.
Yeah, it's certainly been a tough schedule. I mean, you mentioned Purdue. St. Joseph's are both monster, having monster years this year. But even VCU, William & Mary, Georgia State, Richmond, those are all top 100 teams. Those are no slouches.
Yeah, Richmond was really good. They just put it on Old Dominion. It was probably their worst performance of the year. And William & Mary is a sneaky good team from the Colonial. Got some upper-class players, you know, upperclassmen. And VCU, you know, has been solid here the last 5 years or so. They're maybe a little bit down, but they don't lose much, you know, in Richmond. They sell out their games, and they have a raucous crowd. So it's definitely been a tougher schedule. A lot of the same teams they had last year, but they were getting most of those games at home last year, which was the difference, because ODU's got a – and then Louisiana Tech is, what, a 39 straight. ODU's won 32 40. Straight. 40, I'm sorry. ODU's won 32 at home, if I'm not mistaken. They haven't lost in about almost 3 years.
Ed, you look at the first conference game for Old Dominion against Charlotte. Charlotte came in at 3-9. Now they're 3-10. That game's a little closer than the score looks closer. Was it as close as the score indicates?
Not really. Well, ODU was up, I think, 22 with about 10 minutes to go, and they were still up, I think, by 20 with maybe 5 minutes to go. And then a freshman from Charlotte named Adrian White, he just went off. I mean, he hit 8 threes. He hit 7 in the second half. And he's a kid from Richmond, Virginia. And I asked Jeff Jones, did you guys recruit him? And he said, well, no, we weren't looking for a shooting guard that year. But anyway, he put on a show, and Jeff wasn't real happy with the way his team finished the game, or you could say, you know, didn't close Charlotte out as strongly as he wanted them to. So, yeah, that game was a little closer maybe than it should have been.
You look at this game Thursday, what are you expecting to see as the ultimate outcome?
I mean, it's hard to go against Louisiana Tech at home. I think, you know, unless ODU just plays its best game of the year. Like I mentioned before, it seems like a classic matchup, you know, of pace and style, because ODU is like, I think they're 348 in the country in pace, if you look at some of those advanced stats. They don't turn the ball over hardly at all. They're really good at that, but they don't shoot and score a lot of three-pointers. I mean, they don't take a huge number compared to some other teams. And one of the things they've been trying to look for is to get a third scorer to go with, you know, Freeman and Baco. And maybe it's Stith, or maybe it's Zoran Talley, who's a redshirt freshman who's shown some promise. But, you know, on a given night, you know, Freeman or Baco doesn't have it. You know, they have a tough time scoring enough points to beat a lot of people. They're always going to play pretty good defense. It's just a question of whether I think they can score enough points to win a game like that.
Well, Ed, appreciate you joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. I understand you'll be on this same station later in the week with Sean Fox and the sports company.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I wish I could get to Ruston, but I'm not making this trip, but hopefully hopefully in the near future.
Sounds great, Ed. Appreciate you again.
Thank you.
Right. Ed Miller joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio, talking a little Old Dominion basketball. Big game Thursday, the second conference game for both teams. Both teams sitting at 1-0, some of the favorites in the conference. Could have a lot of implications in this game early in the season. You need to make sure you come out. We'll have two pair of tickets to give away for that one later in the show. Coming up after the break, we have head coach of Louisiana Tech, Eric Conkle, joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. This segment brought to you by National Jewelry here in Ruston. Title sponsor, Trenton and Tears in downtown Ruston. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio, brought to you by Trenton and Tears in downtown Ruston. Give us a call on the Fairway Carts of Minden hotline after this segment, because that's where Eric Conkle is waiting for us. 888-993-7762. Let's get to Coach on the Fairway Carts of Minden hotline. How you doing, Coach?
I'm doing great. How are you tonight?
Doing wonderful. Well, Coach, you're off to a good start in the conference and then also in the whole season. Give us your overall thoughts on your basketball team thus far.
Well, I think we've had a very nice beginning. We've grown a lot. We've found out a lot about our team and different lineups through injury and other circumstances. But like the leadership we've got from our upperclassmen, namely Alex Hamilton and Eric McCree, and then we have so many younger guys, and when I mean young, young and experienced, who have really stepped up, whether it be their first time in Division I basketball or first time at Tech or someone that's really elevated their role. I think everybody's improved through the summertime and into the fall, and they've come together nicely, and we want to keep growing.
And, Coach, you've got a couple of injuries. We'll get those out of the way. Any timetable on when you expect Kedar Davis and Janiah White back?
No real timetable yet. I know that they're going to meet with medical staff later this week and early next week just to get an update and see where they're at. Both injuries, both situations are ones that we don't want to rush. And just want to make sure that they're ready to compete full-time before coming back. So it's not something that we're trying to get them back just ASAP. We'd obviously love to have them when they're ready.
You look at Alex Hamilton. Of course, he's a machine when he gets in the lane. Averaging 18 points a game right now, 6 assists. A season ago, whenever teams would run a zone against him, he might struggle. He struggled a lot more than he is this year. What did y'all do with his game in the offseason to really improve him against the zone?
I think several things. First, he's a very good 3-point shooter, and he's really shooting a much better percentage the last several games than he did to start the season. We have a drill that we do. We call it 5-minute threes. Very simple: one ball, one shooter, one rebounder. And if you can make 50 in 5 minutes consistently, you've got the green light to shoot the three. And he's made as many as 62 shots, so he can shoot it. He's shooting with more confidence now late. And then I think he's just really developed and continuing to develop into a full-time point guard. And he's making very good decisions. He leads us in assists. He turns it over at a low rate. And he's using that ability to get into the lane, not only create for himself, but create for others.
I'm sure you've got several other guys with that green light, but you see a lot of threes going up in your offense. Talk about Jacoby Boykins. He's had a little bit of a slump. And then Dayon Griffin, two young guys shooting a three ball.
Both guys, Jacoby and Dayon, I think are just really, really growing in this season. First, defensively, they've started to take assignments with tough opponents, tough individual players where they've guarded, and they've turned that into that type of hustle and hard work into taking good shots on the other end. And we've been a little streaky as a team from the perimeter, but I really believe in these guys shooting the ball. They've shown that they can make it in practice. we're just constantly trying to find that rhythm, and both those guys have been key pieces for us.
You talk about a guy that's grown up a lot in this season. You can't talk about that and not talk about Brandon Shepherd. Thrown into the fire when you lose so much of your post presence early on. Now, what have you seen from him early on, other than just all of his growth?
Well, I've been very hard on Brandon, and he'll admit that too. And just because I expect a lot of him, I think he got a chance to be a very good player. I think early on he was just really trying to find his role and figure out just how hard he had to play to help us. And that once he started to do that, he started to earn some time, and then we started him against Lafayette, and he's really responded to be a guy that hustles and is trying to get his hand on basketball or prevents his man from rebounding. But he's really given us stability there in the front court, and then along with Merle Holden coming back from injury, those two guys have really given us a big lift.
Merle Holden, most people don't realize how good of an athlete he is. Have you been around many bigs that are as athletic as Merle Holden?
There's not many like him. You're right. I mean, he can really bounce off the floor. He's really got a nice touch. He took a three the other night, and I'm good with that because he's made a lot of shots in practice. He's proven he can make it. He was playing at a very, very high level before getting hurt in October, and he's really trying to fight to get back to that. But he's given us so much spirit and help in these four games that he's come back from in helping us, and I just expect him to keep growing as the season progresses.
Hey, Coach, this is Jason. I got a real important question for you. I saw you in line at news today. What did you order for lunch?
I saw you, Jason. I'm a big fan of Nukes. I wasn't going to name the name. I didn't know if it was a sponsor or not. But I got the ham sandwich today, and I've been there twice now. That's a great place. Great addition to Rustin.
Oh, definitely a great addition. I had the Italian. It's amazing. Always got to talk a little food here on Bleed Tech Blue.
Italian sandwich?
Yes, unbelievable. I'm missing Quiznos. Okay. I'm missing Quiznos, but not anymore. All right.
I'll put that on the list.
Definitely. You got to try it. So back to basketball. You mentioned Deion Griffin. This is a guy that he did not score more than 5 points in a game last year. And he seemed to be, he's a good defender a little bit last year. He'd get after some people. He was a good facilitator. But I guess as a freshman, he was kind of deferring to some of the veteran guards that were on the team. This year, he kind of steps up when he's needed. And just talk about the confidence you've seen him. He's grown in confidence on offense, and then he had the big breakout game against Lafayette when he scored 22.
Well, I'm really proud of Deion. He's first, I've really asked him to simplify his game. I know he played some backup point guard last year. We really got him on the wing, but to make good decisions. And we've also, he's got a very nice jump shot. We've worked on him to find that sweet spot in his rhythm with his feet and catching it in rhythm. And he's found that some, and we want to keep continuing to do that. And then we've also encouraged him to be a great defender. He's 6'5", he's got length, he's a good athlete, he's got really good size, and he's improved his strength very much since the summer. And he's become more disciplined in the coverages that we've asked him to do, both in the full court and the half court. And he's improving, and he's got great growth ahead of him. He's got that type of potential, and we're just going to keep pushing to help him get better and better.
Last question on the current roster, and then we'll get into your thoughts on your signing class. Derek Jean, unbelievable game against Ohio State, and then he's playing well as a freshman. Don't get me wrong, 38% from three, nearly 8 points a game. What have you seen from him, and where does he need to grow the most?
Well, I think he's having a very good freshman year. He's playing starter minutes for us. He's our first guard off the bench. He's playing both the point and off the ball. He plays with and without Alex. He's learning about this type of level of all the different coverages and the different defenses and the different offenses and how important it is to defend every possession and take care of the basketball and make great decisions and play with a flow on offense. And that's a lot for a freshman, especially in a lead guard spot. But he's a worker. He's got a great attitude. He eats up coaching, and he's got a very, very bright future.
Well, and Jay Ford, you might be onto something. The last four games, out of the last five games, he's scored in double figures four times, and he's 7 out of 16 from three.
He's shooting at a high level from three. I mean, the 1-3 late in the game against Southern Miss with somebody all over him, and he just drained it right in his face. So that's he's really shooting the three ball at a high level. Coach, let's go into your recruiting class. I believe you've signed four players. If you could make a brief synopsis of each of those four.
Sure. Jalen Harris is a 6'4 combo guard from Duncanville, Texas. He's just a big-bodied guard, and he's a young kid, too. He turned 17 years old in August. He's got great bloodlines. Both of his parents played college basketball at SMU. His mom's jersey is actually in the rafters there, and his best basketball is ahead of him. He's played a high level of basketball in the summertime. Been hobbled with a little injury here this fall, but he's getting ready to come back here now, but we think that he's got a chance to be kind of that combination big guard that we like here. Jacoby Pemberton from Lancaster High School near Dallas, he's a winner. He won a state championship last year, won the Coca-Cola Classic just recently, big tournament in Dallas, and he's like a combination forward. We think his long-term position will be at a three, but he's about 6'6", very long, very athletic, and just a tough, hard-nosed competitor that can play and defend multiple positions. And then Oliver Powell from Rowlett, Texas, he is a 6'8 forward. He's got skill. He can shoot the three. He's working on that to make it even more consistent. But he's a very, very, very good athlete. Rebounds it, puts it in around the basket. His team presses, so he's used to moving and trapping. He's got a bright future ahead of him, too. And then our last signee was Daquan Bracey from St. Francis Academy out of Baltimore, Maryland. And he's a 5'10", just dynamic guard. Very, very long arms. Ambidextrous, and he's just a general, and he can really, really push the ball, handles the ball like it's a part of his hand. He's shooting the basketball at a better rate this season, and he's just a tremendous competitor. So we feel like, and our goal was to recruit a team, a four-man team that could all play together, and each one of those guys satisfy those positions.
Well, Coach, let's look at Thursday night's matchup against Old Dominion. Of course, you're going for number 41 in a row. You say that you don't talk about it with your guys. I'm sure that's true. I know that's a big-time thing for y'all, though, with the second-longest home winning streak in the country. How important is it for fans to get out there and make some noise?
Well, we love our fans. They've been great, and they're lively. They're loud. They give us a lift when we need them. We just love to have more and more people. Our students are back here in town. I'm sure it's going to be a great, great environment for them and all of our fans. So we just encourage everybody to come on out. This will be a great Conference USA ball game early in the season on national television. Let's show them what LaTeX's all about.
And then you look at Trey Freeman for Old Dominion, Coach. He's a tough guy to match up against because he's such a scorer. What's your plan against him?
Well, Trey Freeman, he is an elite mid-range jump shooter, and he can do it off the dribble, right, going right, going left, shot faking, stepping through, coming off screens. We've got to do a great job of chasing him, making him uncomfortable, putting different guys on him with length and athleticism and fresh bodies, and then we've got to help. We can't just guard him with one guy. We've got to have guys there on the catch and in gaps so he can't just penetrate and get great shots. But they've got a lot of pieces. They're a very good team, and he's certainly a big part of their success.
Do you expect them to try to slow the game down and make it a kind of a grinded-out half-court game?
I think so. It's really how they play. I mean, they're out of 351 Division I teams. I think they're 345th in tempo with the number of possessions they play. They just really make you guard, and they don't turn it over an awful lot. They run a lot of different plays and actions. They'll post you up. They'll throw it inside, throw it back out. And then they rebound the ball at a very, very, very high level. So we've got it's going to be a very physical ball game. It's going to be, I'd say, similar to the Florida Gulf Coast game that we played on the road. Just that type of feel, and hopefully we can get it going a little bit up-tempo, but we're going to have to play in the half court an awful lot.
Well, Coach, we really appreciate you joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio tonight. We'll talk to you again soon. Good luck Thursday night.
I appreciate it, guys, and hope to see you at a local eatery again soon.
You know we'll be there.
You will.
That's great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, man. Eric Conkle, head coach of Louisiana Tech, Dunkin' Dogs joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Let's take this this break. This segment brought to you by Pierce Service Company and Gary Stokely, Keller Williams Realty, and as always, our title sponsor, Trenton Interiors in downtown Ruston. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com. Jason Jones, the analyst of BleedTechBlue.com, joining me as he always does. John Tabor doing a great job producing the show. We're brought to you by Trenton Interiors in downtown Ruston. Go see those guys, 111 North Trenton Street. Give them a call, 318-255-7six. 9-8. Give us a call. Fairway Carts of Minden Hotline, 888-993-7762, or send us a text, 888-993-7762. Both of those brought to you by Fairway Carts of Minden. Jason, a little back to football. It's good stuff from basketball for a half hour. Well, we can't go an entire show and not talk a lot about football because that's just who you and I are.
That's right. One quick basketball note. We were talking about Rice in the break. Rice has the number one score in the conference and the number three, and I thought the number three sounded like Igor Kulichov had to be a stretch forward, but no, 6'5 small forward, but he is the number three scorer in Conference USA.
I think you actually might have gotten that last name, too, after looking at it. Kulichov.
Gorbachev, it's about the same, you know.
Jason, we're going to talk a little bit about position groups a little bit more today, or in this segment. We'll start with quarterback because
that's where you start.
That's where you have to start. We did hear today that Jamar Smith has been working out with a baseball team before practices begin in a month. So there's that.
But the season starts, what, mid-February?
Yeah, but it'll be going on during spring football.
Yeah, I mean, we'll just have to see what happens whenever spring football starts, which is usually, what, mid to late March, something like that. So it'll be right in the middle of the baseball season. You know, we'll see.
And for Tech fans that are wondering who in the world is Jamar Smith, Jamar Smith is a true freshman quarterback out of Meridian, Mississippi, three-star quarterback, did not throw a single interception his entire senior year of high school.
Yeah, he's got a real good head on his shoulders, really good kid, and he turned some heads in the fall. His first action in Ruston, you know, he looked really good, and so then you've got the baseball question is he going to be able to participate in spring football? I'm assuming they're going to work that out. He'll be able to participate, at least for most of it. Price Wilson, redshirt freshman, you know,
redshirt sophomore next year.
He'll be a third-year sophomore. The guy that recruited him, Tony Peterson, just left. Does that change anything? Was he the favorite of Peterson, but will he not be with the new staff? You know,
he still can sling it.
He can sling it. So, and then you've got Ryan Higgins, who has started in the past. He'll be a senior. He's got a chance. So those are your three guys. I don't expect, you know, I mean, Coach Hulse has pretty much said that they're not going to bring in a senior transfer. Could they sign a junior college guy late just to add to the competition? Who knows? But
It doesn't seem like it.
So those three are probably your candidates. And just like we talked about earlier with the three guys at running back, a lot's going to be found out in spring football.
And it's a perfect segue into recruiting. Looks like there will be a visit from Jack Abraham out of Oxford, Mississippi, a former Tulane commitment, 6'1", 210-pounder. You talking about some measurements that have been all over the map. That would be Jack Abraham's. See, 6 foot 175, 6'1", 210. Not sure exactly what's true. We'll go with 6 foot 180.
Yeah, I mean, that's
Gatorade Player of the Year in the state of Mississippi, though.
And a teammate of Louisiana Tech tight end commitment, Zach Kuzar. We're
going to go with Kuzar.
Okay. We're all
or
about
Kozar,
the,
something.
We're all about the pronunciation today. Aaron, Baycoat, of Old Dominion, and Igor from Rice, Kulichov. Kulichov.
But yeah, Jack Abraham threw for, I think, like 5,000 yards in his high school career. That's a lot of yards. Maybe it was 5,000 this year. I think it actually was 5,000 this year. That makes more sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. So, who knows?
But Abraham, of course, one time he could be still committed to Tulane, but he is going to visit Louisiana Tech. Offers from showing a Cal offer early on, and South Alabama are his FBS offers. Alcorn State, a FCS offer as well, but we at Rivals.com, we like to look at the FBS record, FBS offers most first and foremost.
Well, you know, and if he's a Mississippi kid with the Cal offer, you know that former Louisiana Tech center Jacob Peeler was the one recruiting him for Cal.
That's an interesting name, speaking of which, for the offensive coordinator job.
Yeah, I mean,
he hadn't been a full-time coach very long, but man, can the kid recruit.
He's got 10 commitments. I think at least two of them are four stars. He's a guy that played at Tech. He's been an intern at Tech, from Mississippi. And he came up learning under Tony Franklin. He's been on a Tony Franklin kind of offense staff now for, what, 6 years? And so he's kind of learned that. And, you know, who knows? Maybe he would be a candidate to come back to Ruston and be on the offensive staff. You know, he's making – I think the USA Today just came out with their salary database. I think he was making $167,000 last year. The Cal staff just got raises. So who knows? He might be closer to $200,000. But Tony Peterson was making $200,000 here in Ruston. And you know, $200,000 in Ruston goes a lot further than it does in Oakland, California.
You and I both have visited the Bay Area, and to say that real estate costs in the Bay Area are crazy is an understatement.
Yeah, I mean, what would rent for $1,200 here would be, you know, $3,500 at least over there. I mean, it's at least three times.
At least, if not more than that.
It's just insane.
Looking through this, we've already gone over running backs, gone over offensive line in some pretty good detail.
Yeah, I mean, offensive line, the key there is going to be the veterans inside. I mean, you've got Brunson, Wixon, Mahaffey.
And then Darryl Brown, who got Louisiana sports writer, all first team. So that's
– you've got to think the tackle's got to be Shane Carpenter and
– I think they actually may go find it, see if they can find a right tackle in the JUCO ranks. I really do.
Maybe so, just for depth, if not to push Carpenter. But then you've got Brown on the other side. And that's kind of your tackles. But then on the inside, you know, Brunson, Mahaffey, Dugas, Wixon, you got four guys battling for three spots. And then we talked about Deontay McCready, was a young guy this year that looked really good, and so he'll be back in that mix. So really five guys are going to be battling for three spots. So a lot of depth there inside with Wixon presumably getting that extra year back.
And four offensive linemen committed, three offensive linemen committed, one signed.
Yeah.
In December, grad Drew Melanson out of Hahnville High School signed with the Bulldogs. He will be at Tech for spring camp. 6'4", 280-pounder. I really, really like the four offensive linemen Tech has in the boat right now. Tyler Fondle from Westgate High School in New Iberia, 6'3", 300-pounder. Kennedy Madison out of Ouachita, 6'3", 280. Cody Rusi from Burleson High School in Texas, 6'3", 270. Really good-looking offensive lineman.
Yeah, most of those guys are really heavy. Cody's not, but he's a center, and he's just a brawler. I mean, that guy's tough. And I feel like he's going to be a really good interior lineman in the future. But another one that's already here on the roster, Ethan Reed, 6'4", 287, freshman from Orange, Texas.
They're really high on him.
He's one that could be pushing for a backup center. And then with all those guys that can play center being – seniors next year, you know, he's got to be in contention for center of the future.
I think he's an engineering major at Louisiana Tech, so you want somebody that's cerebral playing off playing center, and that is Ethan Reed to a T, who was the last engineering major at Louisiana Tech playing center.
Warner.
Stephen Warner has a civil engineering degree from Louisiana Tech, if my memory serves me correctly. So that is always a good combination at Louisiana Tech for centers.
And you mentioned earlier, you know, maybe a potential future left tackle in Devontae Lovett. Another one is Michael Rodriguez, on again, off again tight end, listed at 6'6", 275. I mean, some people are raving about his footwork, and he could be the missing piece to that depth at offensive tackle.
No doubt about it. I don't know how I forgot about that one. But, yeah, the as far as recruiting goes, I think they could add. I know you're saying they've already got four. I think they'll sign close to 25 this year. I don't think they'll sign 25 because that's not Skip's MO.
Yeah,
Drew Melancon could. I don't think they can count him back last year because I think they would probably filled up.
Yeah, I mean, I would say 22 to 23 would be my guess. But I'll go through and count in the break how many seniors are coming off that were scholarship seniors.
So let's go to wide receiver for the Bulldogs. Only one receiver committed for Tech right now, and that Zach Cousar from Oxford, Mississippi, a 6'4", 220-pound tight end / inside receiver. In his highlights, you see him split out as a receiver, put his hand on the ground. I think ultimately he's a tight end with his hand on the ground at Louisiana Tech if he's already 220 pounds. Kurt Hester in 2 years will have him at 250 pounds.
Yeah, and, you know, you've got Ricky Jones that was a senior, Josh Gaston, Andy McElinden. So you need to replace those mids, like Coach Holtz likes to call them.
And Bobby Holly comes back next year.
So you will have Bobby Holly coming in, but you're going to need some more. So Cousar would be a good one to fill that spot. But as far as wide receiver, you know, you're only losing Paul Turner. So out of the guys that played a lot, and so you've got all these other receivers coming back, you don't need to sign a lot of them. The one guy that we've seen a lot of is Jarod Sanders out in Dallas. You know, he's kind of been linked to Stanford here lately, but before that it was mostly between Tech and
Northwestern
or the Big Ten. So you know, his dad was Glenn L. Sanders, probably the leading tackler in Tech's history, a linebacker. His son is over there in the Dallas area playing receiver, and a good one, obviously a smart kid if Northwestern and Stanford are looking at him.
But you also look at here, Tech had a transfer in Alfred Smith, somebody they weren't expecting.
Tarzan.
You don't have to have a receiver in this class.
No, you don't have to, but I mean, if you can get a legacy kid like Sanders, who's a really good recruit, you'll take one. But
you don't have to reach.
You don't have to reach at all. And there's some pretty good ones here in the state of Louisiana that it doesn't look like Tech's going to reach on, at least at the moment. And so they're in the position where they can be very, very selective.
Defensive line, one of my favorite positions for Tech to recruit, or anybody to watch recruits for, because of the success that Tech has had at that position, especially D tackle, with the likes of Jelly Bean Ellis, Justin Ellis at the Raiders now, Vernon Butler likely to be a top 3-round pick.
D'Anthony Smith
playing for the Seahawks, I believe, still.
He actually just is on the Bears active roster.
Well, there you go. That man has bounced around. But he's been on an active roster a long time. So Louisiana Tech has been producing some
defensive tackles. And then at defensive end, too, you've got IK and you've got Houston Bates. So
yep.
All across the defensive line, Tech's been putting players in the NFL the last few years, and Vernon Butler will definitely be the next one. But the big question is, okay, now inside.
And go ahead.
Who replaces Butler inside? You've got a big shoes to fill.
And Tyler Porter, stump.
Yeah, Tyler Porter's moving on. So
the talent coming back is obviously could have been probably the second best defensive lineman on the team in Jalen Ferguson. Aaron Brown's back
inside.
Canty's back.
And then the two young guys that were inside last year, Courtney Wallace and Jordan Bradford, true freshmen.
Saw a lot of playing time.
Bradford's out of South Mississippi. He was listed at 6'2", 280. Wallace could be the guy that has to fill that position of Butler. Wallace is 6'2", 336, Neville High School. I mean, those two guys are going to be the ones that should fill up a lot of that playing time inside, along with Aaron Brown.
Hakeem Gray's coming off a shoulder surgery, so he'll be ready to go for the spring.
And that's kind of the spot. Who's the other big guy that could be playing nose guard, you know, behind potentially Wallace. Say Wallace gets the starting spot. Is it Hakeem Gray? Is it LaDante Davenport, who's a true freshman last year?
Name I'm excited about LaDante Davenport.
Yeah, I mean, he came in at 293, so we'll see what kind of weight he can put on in the offseason. And then Cedric Johnson, who was a redshirt freshman at 6'2", 304. So you've got some candidates there. Then you mentioned on the end, I mean, everybody knows who the starters are going to be in Kansas and Ferguson, but who's going to be able to come in and play behind them?
Edarga had a good year before he tore his ACL. Emmanuel Turner, you saw flashes from him. Of course, we talked about Deldrick Canty. Brandon Brinson redshirted this year, former high school quarterback from Ellender High School in Houma. And, of course, with Vontarius Dora leaving, a very versatile defensive lineman, it's curious to see. There's plenty of depth there for the Bulldogs, though, and they've got plenty of options.
Yeah, Brinson's an interesting one. He could definitely fill those shoes. And then there's a commitment on the board. It's probably the biggest commitment
in recent memory.
Yeah.
Willie Baker out of Livonia High School, a three-star with offers from Texas A&M, Auburn, Michigan. Big-time player, 6'4", 235.
So we saw what, as a freshman, Ferguson could come in here and do. And obviously he had a redshirt year, but could Willie Baker come in and have that kind of impact?
And honestly, if Ferguson puts on more weight, which is expected, you bring Willie Baker in, you put him opposite Ferguson, that's scary.
Yeah, and then
two pass rusher extraordinaires.
Yeah, they could be monsters on the defensive ends.
And then another commitment, Julius Turner out of Meridian, Mississippi, 6'2", 275. He will be a big boy by the time he gets here. If he gets on Kurt Hester's eating plan and weight program, he'll be 310, maybe right at 300 pounds when he gets to Louisiana Tech.
Yeah, he can be another guy that we talked about potentially battling for one of those nose guard positions. Now, I think the biggest question mark for the whole team is linebacker. You lose three starters and not a whole lot of experience coming in behind them. Probably the two most experienced players, I would say Russell Ferris, 5'11", 217, can play middle linebacker, can play outside. Well, and then
Lloyd Grogan.
And Lloyd Grogan's the other one. He's a former safety. He can play outside. And then Michael Mims, who was injured a lot last season.
He tore his ACL as well.
5'11", 211 pounds. He's another one with some experience. But, you know, missing C.J. Cleveland, missing Bo Feet, I mean, those are just big shoes to fill on the outside. And then middle linebacker with Nick Thompson, such a huge void.
Brandon Derman saw a lot of play this year. He's one to watch.
They did play Derman a lot as a true freshman inside. Ferris, even though he's a little undersized, could play inside. And then they signed they've got the commitment from the junior college linebacker from California coming in. So you've got that's the one junior college guy in the signing class, and that's because linebacker, especially in the middle, is such a big question mark.
Somebody to watch would be Davon Washington out of Ash, a redshirt freshman this year, be redshirt sophomore next year. They really like him. He's always in the right place. Donald Freeman out of Scotlandville in Baton Rouge sat out this year, will be a redshirt freshman next year. Quante Moore, only a redshirt sophomore.
Yeah, and Freeman at 6'3", he's got a lot of length. And if, you know, he could have an impact kind of like his former high school teammate Dozier Canty had, if he can come in and be healthy and get some playing time on the outside, he could be a guy that can really rush like from the edge, especially if they have any of those 3-4 looks.
Dante Williams out of Parkway, redshirted this year. He looks bigger and bigger every time I see him. Colin Scott out of Manville High School in the Houston area, 6'2", 230. He can really run. He may be your future, the next great middle linebacker for Louisiana Tech.
Yeah, well, Colin Scott and Brandon Derman were the two true freshmen this year that already had the kind of college-ready bodies, you know, weighing at least 220 pounds. And so I'm really excited about both of them.
Look at the commitments at linebacker Devin Hamilton out of Lake Charles, Washington Marion. Actually already had a linebacker at Louisiana Tech from Washington and Marion, and Brandon Jackson from back in my days as a student at Louisiana Tech, 6'1", 215. Eric Kinzire out of LaPorte, Texas, 6'3", 235, kind of a rush-in kind of guy. And then you mentioned Thomas Clutcher, a 6'1", 225-pound linebacker who reminds me a lot of Nick Thomason on tape. I expect to see a lot of him next year for the Bulldogs. Let's go to defensive back real fast so we can wrap this up and take a break and then finish the show up really quickly. Looking at defensive back, of course, you lose your three starters at defensive back in Rice and Abraham, Darius Barnes, and Kendrell Bryce. So you've got a lot of shoes to fill there.
Yeah, I mean, a corner, especially losing Darius Barnes and Bryce and Abraham, you've got little experience coming back. So the candidates are Roland Dunn, who was the lone sophomore on the team this year that had some playing time, and then the true freshman that got to play, Aaron Robertson, Ephraim Kitchen, Trey Spencer. So you've got four guys that got a little experience, and then the two transfers coming in, Lewis and Jackson, Gerald Jackson from Haynesville, Louisiana, Ronald Lewis from Harvey, Louisiana, an Arizona State transfer. Jackson's a Hawaii transfer. Those two guys have some good size to them. One's 6 foot, one's 5'11". They're going to come in and push those returners, but none of those guys are, you know, veterans. They're all really young, and so it's going to be interesting to see out of those probably six guys, you know, who can lock down those four spots in the 2D.
Real fast, a little breaking news commitment. John Randall Belton, quarterback from West Monroe, has had his share of tragedy on the football field, two torn ACLs. He put it on Twitter 27 minutes ago. After having and overcoming adversities in my high school career, I am truly blessed to say that I am committing to play football at Louisiana Tech University.
Awesome.
I see him as an athlete. He could be a quarterback, obviously. I mean, he was highly touted before he got hurt. So that's a big get for Louisiana Tech. Let's go through the defensive back commitments real fast. I know John's probably about ready to jump on us. David Beasley out of Pine Bluff, Arkansas, big get, three-star safety. Julian Chandler, probably a corner out of Missouri City, Texas, Hightower High School. Reggie Cleveland out of Scotlandville. Zach Hannibal out of Ouachita. Dad played basketball at Louisiana Tech. Talk about a guy with a lot of upside. That would be Zach Hannibal. Big-time corner for the Bulldogs. Let's take this break. Other side of the break, we will wrap up the show and give some predictions on Thursday's game in the TAC against Old Dominion. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97. Back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Just a couple of minutes left in this show. We're also brought to you by Trenton Interiors in downtown Ruston. Go visit those guys for all your interior decorating needs. Just going real fast through this John Randall Belton commitment for Louisiana Tech. Before his injury, offers from Georgia Tech, ULL, Mississippi State, TCU. Big get for the Bulldogs. Stay tuned to BleedTechBlue.com. We'll have all the latest on that commitment. We could see him as an athlete, could see him as a quarterback. 6'3", 203. It's a big boy.
Yeah.
And moves really well for that size.
Moves really well, and, you know, you hated to see him get injured so early in the season, you know, after already having suffered injuries in his career, but hey, maybe that helps Louisiana Tech. You know, if he had a big senior season, there's no telling what schools will be knocking on his door. So maybe it's a blessing in disguise. He'll be able to come into Ruston, and who knows? He could be the quarterback of the future.
And he's no stranger to Ruston, Louisiana. Grew up in Ruston. His dad's a district attorney in the area. So big get for Louisiana Tech. Congratulations to John Randall Belton out of West Monroe High School. Jason, let's give our predictions on Thursday night's game inside the TAC. So it's a big enough game where I want to do the attendance prediction and winner / margin of victory predictions. I'll start because I've been a little prepared. I'll go between 4,000 and 5,000 attendance. I'll call it 4,200.
I was going to go 4,500, so we were right there together.
4,200, and Tech wins by 15. but it feels closer than that.
So I feel like it's going to be about 55-47. I think that it's going to be an ugly game. You know, Tech.
Ooh, that's ugly.
Tech was only up like, what was it against Southern Miss? Like 15-10 in that kind of range, you know, with about 8 minutes to go in the first half.
And they blew it open.
Then they blew it open, but, you know.
And then it was never close again.
If Tech gets off to a slow start, you know, it could be a low-scoring game. I still feel like Tech's going to win, but I'm going to say more like 8-10 points. I'll say something like 55-47. I think the attendance will get better later in the season as conference play picks up. Even though this is a big game, it's only going to be in the 4,000 range, 4,500, like you said. If this game was played in February, I feel like it'd be 5,500, 6,000.
Good work, John, on the ones and the twos. Sorry we made you sweat in that last segment. We got it in. We got all the breaks in, just barely. Jason, good stuff. For all those guys, I am Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com. Come check us out on BleedTechBlue.com. We'll be back next time, next week, right here. Same time, same place. See you then.
Listen for Bleed Tech Blue Radio, brought to you by Trenton Interiors, every Tuesday, 6 to 7:30 p.m. Go deep inside Tech football, basketball, and recruiting with your host, Jonathan Ford. Our show is also brought to you by your 26 area local State Farm agents, Brister's Smokehouse, National Jewelry, Pierce Service Company, Brennan Dodge, Dairy Queen, and Gary Stokely, Keller Williams Realty, as well as your hotline sponsor, Fairway Cards. Thanks for listening to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN 97.7. On the MSU.